Tales from the Tinker's Den. Always wet.
After the 33rd week in a row, Margot, the part-time girl, told Jerry that she wouldn't work Tuesdays anymore on account of the boredom.
Boredom, is it? And with the darts matches on and all, I should have thought it'd be anything but.
He drained off his whiskey with a smack of the lips and leaned up close to Margot's sweater.
You can tell old Jerry, girl. Lad's a bit too free, is it? Visiting team's taking the piss.
Margot blushed in spite of herself and tucked her arms firmly across her chest.
Can't say as I blame them, though. Hard to ignore the...
Never you mind about that. It's not the lads at all. It's Morris.
Morris? Our Morris, what comes in on a Tuesday?
Haven't I just said so? I can handle any 50 gaping lads, and you too for that matter, Mr. Jerry Culhane.
She shook his hand off her shoulder.
But whatever can old Morris be about? He has his pints all quiet and tidy over on the lounge side. Don't mix with the darts folk at all, though.
I know. That's just it. He don't mix. He's too bloody boring.
But many's the time I've come in and seen him chatting away to you, free as you please.
Have you ever listened in?
Well, it don't do. Now do it.
Don't it then.
Margot put one hand on her hip and the other in the air, pointing a painted nail at a certain well-used stool.
You seem to have no trouble lurking about when it's my Derek on the other side of the bar.
Lurking? Who you calling lurking? I bloody well owns this place, I do. And?
And on it went. Jerry, for all that he was the owner of the Tinker's Dam, liked a spirited wench, particularly behind his bar. Perhaps it went with being an Irishman in Wales. Margot, for her part, respected having a boss she could tell to go shag himself without losing her job. There were other pubs in the Vale, of course, and other wenches as well, but neither side of the argument fancied looking them over. After a bit of stuff and nonsense, Jerry's residual charm had its way, and Margot agreed to work another Tuesday, provided Jerry considered her plea. Tuesday came, and with it a fine drizzle. The darts team stamped in shouting at 7, and for half an hour both Jerry and Margot pulled pints as fast as the beer would flow. No sooner were the lads tucked into their game than the front door opened, and around to the side of the lounge came a thin, dour figure, smoothing at his mustache. It was Morris, wearing his gray pullover vest and an old school tie knotted just so up on his chicken skin neck. He walked to the far end of the bar, took up his spot next to the passageway, and ordered a pint of Welsh bitter. Margot pulled it.
Ooh, spot of weather out, isn't it?
Margot said it was. She served up his pint.
Still, always wet this time of year.
He handed over the coins and his mustache twitched.
Better buy them, see if they're real.
Margot rang up the sale, but before she could turn away, Morris said,
Been up to much lately?
No, just watching telly.
There was a brief flurry of buying on the bar side, and Margot joined Jerry in serving.
That didn't sound so bad,
said Jerry out of the side of his mouth.
He's not half started yet.
You're altogether too high-strung, lass.
Jerry eased his belly past Margot's hips and stood watching the play of the darts. Margot clung to the lager spigot like it was the last pair of shoes on bargain offer. But out of the corner of her eye, she saw Morris finish his drink, smooth again at his mustache, and wait for service. Stalling, she delivered out nuts and cigars to an old gent on the visiting team. Then Evan Evans threw 2 triple 20s and a double 10 to win, and Jerry sent Margot over to the lounge to fetch the Jameson. There was a young couple back in the corner doing things with their hands, and 2 commercial travelers huddled near the fire. But otherwise, the lounge held only Morris. He brightened when he saw Margot.
Spot of weather out, isn't it?
Welsh again,
said Margot, stretching high to reach the Jameson.
Please,
said Morris, with a downward glance at her thigh.
Still, always wet this time of year.
Margot bent down and rearranged her dress. She began to pull the beer. Morris ran a finger along the underside of his mustache.
Been watching a lot of telly then, have you?
Margot nodded, willing the beer to pour faster.
Still, with this weather, it's not so bad, telly.
Margot made an involuntary noise in her throat and hoped it sounded agreeable. She handed across the beer and waited for the coins.
Better bite them, see if they're real.
Margot fled, running the length of the connected bars to wait on Fat Howell, who was shouting and pounding the bar over his singles victory. Jerry served the losers, and then Margot took the next in line, ordered 2 bottles of Forest Brown Ale, which sent her back across to the lounge side.
Over and back, like a bloody tennis ball.
Margot bent for the bottles.
If this weather keeps up, you'll be wishing you had a tennis ball, eh?
Got a customer,
said Margot, backing away.
Still, always wet this time of year.
After that, Margot fought to serve the darts players, waiting at their elbows, cheering on the play, bustling about straightening chairs and ashtrays until Fat Howell complained of fussiness. Morris had a 3rd pint, Jerry serving this time, and then tottered off satisfied, with a final comment to Margot not to watch too much telly. Better try tennis, he said. Wednesday was Margot's night off, and young Tony had a long-standing date for the Vicious Piddlers concert, so Jerry was alone when the Penryn crowd came in, and didn't immediately notice the stocky, elephant-eared chap who trailed into the pub in their wake. When all the Penryn lot had at last quit scuffling over who was to buy for the evening and settled into their favorite chairs, there he was, waggling his great elephant ears, standing alone and beaming at the end of the bar, just next to the passageway.
Good evening, sir,
said Jerry, who could tell a man of substance.
May I proffer you a beverage?
The man gave a rising hum from the back of his throat and nodded his head at the pump handle of the traditional ale.
Pull handle job, is it? A man who knows his beer.
The man made a low sound through his nose and said quickly,
May you be having one, then?
Jerry allowed as he would, and thanks very much. When he'd poured out 2 pints, they raised and toasted, Jerry saying,
Cheers,
and the stocky gent clearing his throat. Jerry had been in the midst of a stock-up, but he knew the form. When the customer bought for the publican chatted up the customer.
Live round here, do you?
Said the gent, wiggling his head. His ears flapped forward and back.
Nice place, the Vale,
said Jerry, fishing for topics. The stranger hummed. Jerry swigged deeply at his beer, and then, suddenly, he knew the man. It was Clive Beaumaris. He was a legend in the Vale, at least among the publicans. Jerry'd heard of him at the annual do, on the bus back from the races.
Been to every pub twixt Coolbridge and Plantwood,
said a man from St. Donat's.
Him and his diabolical humming.
Most boring man in the world,
said another. It was said that disaster followed any pub adopted by Clive Beaumaris. Regulars dropped off, barmen quit.
Like a bloody scourge he is,
said the older ones.
Throw poor Hickok over the bridge to Somerset, if you can imagine.
What brought him, none could say. But once he set foot in your door, he was there for a year and a day. Wednesdays, always. All this came back to Jerry in the length of a swig, and the bitter turned sour in his throat. Clive Beaumaris hummed some more, intermittently and arrhythmically, as if he were just on the verge of beginning a sentence. Twice, Jerry half turned to check the customers in the public bar, and both times the stocky gent's hums altered pitch, calling him back to attention. Jerry swigged and smiled. Clive Beaumaris stood at an angle, hands in pockets, humming and rocking on his feet. Jerry smiled again. A moment later, he caught himself humming. With a quick, nervous laugh, he downed the last of his beer, said thanks again, and bounced off to refill the glasses of 2 laborers extinguishing their cigarettes on the wooden surface of the bar. When he came back across to the lounge, one of the Penryn chaps was waiting on a 2nd round, with Clive Beaumaris humming and nodding fiercely into his face. This was repeated 2 weeks running, and by the 3rd Wednesday of the Beaumaris visitation, the Penryn crowd had taken to downing 1 quick round and departing. The take that night was abysmal. The following night, Margot cornered Jerry just before opening.
I must get off the Tuesdays. I'm going mad with that Morris.
Whatever do you want from me? Am I to throw the man out?
Get someone else to work it. Young Tony or Gwyneth even.
Gwyneth Thomas running a bar? You must be mad.
I must be. To carry on with that lump of lead. I can't bear the sight of him. He must be the most boring man in the world.
Margot ripped open a new box of peanut packets and jammed the bags onto the holder. Jerry's mouth was already open, shaping a retort, when Margot's last sentence replayed itself in his mind. Most boring indeed. Could there be a pretender to the crown? He thought of Clive Beaumaris and the Wednesday Paul. Here, he thought to himself, was a chance to teach Margot a lesson.
Right then, I'll get young Tony on the Tuesdays, and you do Wednesday.
Margot had started off to stock up, but now she stopped, turned in her tracks, and gaped.
You mean that, Jerry? No more Morris and his blather? I can have the Wednesdays?
Well, said Jerry, looking as modest as he dared.
You are a fine bit of a barmaid, Jar. And after all...
Whatever came after all was never said. Margot's lips engulfed Jerry's, leaving him with a faint taste of cherries in his mouth and a fine stirring in his pants. The following Tuesday at 7:30, the door opened, splattering drops of rain as it shut, and around to the side of the lounge came Morris, wearing his gray pullover vest and a necktie knotted with care. Jerry shoved young Tony his way.
Ooh, spot of weather we're having, isn't it?
Young Tony agreed.
Pint of Welsh. Where's our young lady at?
On Wednesday she is,
mumbled Tony. He blew his nose into a paper towel and bent to pull the beer.
Oh,
said Morris. A frown line appeared on his brow.
Been watching a lot of telly, she had. Told me so.
Tony offered up the beer and Morris slid across the coins.
Better bite him to see they're real,
he said, smoothing jauntily at his mustache. Jerry snuck over to the lounge to build up the fire, but Morris caught him on the way back.
What's this about our Margot? On Wednesdays now?
That's right. Don't worry. Young Tony will see you right.
Yes, I suppose so. Still,
he said to Jerry's retreating back,
it's always wet this time of year, Tuesdays or no.
On Wednesday, Margot bounced in with a new hairdo and a sleeveless leather jerkin. Jerry kept her bending over stocking shelves for the first half hour, hoping the leather would stretch. But then he heard a low harrumph from the lounge bar. He offered to finish up himself. Margot straightened up, blowing stray bits of hair off her face, and took the two steps down to the other bar with a happy flourish.
Good evening, sir. Can I help you?
A quick treble of throat noises escaped at the moment of Margot's appearance, and then Jerry heard the sounds of the pump handle working.
Lovely night, what?
Will you be having one?
The voice was quick and guttural, as if the vocal cords were unused to shaping words.
Don't mind if I do. Cheers.
Fat Howell came in on the bar side with two of his mates, and Jerry turned too, supplying beer and peanuts, two pasties each, then more beer, and it was 20 minutes before he had time to think about Margot, the stocky gent with the elephant ears. He peeked around the corner of the bar where it met the lounge, and there was Margot, white-faced and nodding. Clive Beaumaris stood rocking back and forth, in counter-time to his hum, with his hand on a full pint glass, and his eyes reflectively on Margot's bosom. The next week was even more tedious. Morris seemed still upset about Margot's absence, and made up for it by corralling young Tony for half an hour at a time to chat over the likelihood of rain on the morrow and Margot's professed viewing habits. Young Tony sniffled into his sleeve and grumped about, but that didn't stop Morris. On the Wednesday, the humming man bought both Jerry and Margot a drink and contrived to hold their attention so long that customers on the bar side began to bang their glasses and complain. Even Jerry found himself falling into a pattern of response humming while standing fixated across the bar from the vast, wiggling ears of Clive Beaumaris. Margot, of course, didn't dare to complain. Getting off Tuesdays had been hard enough. As for Jerry, he couldn't afford to turn business away. Even young Tony felt the mood by the following Tuesday. The darts team came in a bunch, all red-faced and eager for the game. Jerry joked along with one ear cocked for the sound of the front door opening and Morris's whoo as he came in. It never came. All through the evening they waited, Jerry and Tony, wondering at his absence. He hadn't missed a Tuesday in months, but there was no Morris. On the Wednesday following, the Penryn crowd left early, and it was Margot alone on the lounge side when Clive Beaumaris hummed into the pub. He took up his position on the far end of the lounge bar, emitting brief, unintelligible snatches of song. Margot took a deep breath.
Draft ale, is it, sir?
She'd considered wearing earplugs and merely nodding from time to time, but Derek had said it wouldn't look well, and besides, how would she hear the other customers? Said the stocky gent. Margot pulled hard at the ale pump twice and was rewarded with a full pint. Without pausing to think, she shoved the glass across the bar to Beaumaris and said quickly,
76, please.
His humming broke off in a chortle, and his rocking stopped. He bent his head sideways, left ear flopping down in the process, and said quite slowly,
"Will you not be having one?"
Margot bit her tongue down on her lower lip. Refusing a drink was definitely not the form. But the thought of a pint's worth of gratuitous hums and ear wiggling just then was enough to make her spit pins.
Ah, well, you see, it's just that. There's the cellar work and, you see, and.
A mournful, descending note could be heard in the back of Fomaris' throat.
That is to say, yes, I shall have one. Just a half pint. I'm pouring it now, see?
Margot raised her glass and managed a quavering.
Cheers.
The front door opened, shut, and around at the side of the lounge appeared a scrawny chicken neck under a dapper, smoothed-out mustache. Margot bit down hard and cracked the glass.
Ooh, spot of weather we're having, isn't it?
He broke off his shudder abruptly when he saw the stranger standing in his place at the bar. He edged down towards his favorite position, frowning slightly at the intruder.
So then, Margot, what you been up to lately?
Nothing. Nothing.
Working the Wednesdays, is it? Margot, I say, the girl's gone off.
Jerry found her later in the cellar, shivering like the Furies behind the unsold cases of red wine and snuffling into an invoice sheet.
Say there, lass. No need to cry, is it?
And tried to put his arm around her shoulder.
Keep your bloody hands to yourself.
She shook him off and stood up. Ink from the invoice had run along her cheek.
Go ahead, Mr. Jerry Bloody Culhane. Give me the sack. See if I care. Those two.
Her rage rendered her speechless. Jerry passed a hand across his mouth.
It's all right, love. No need to cry.
Outlot, you bloody know. I'm not crying. I'm half mad with exasperation. The second most boring man in the world and his bleeding double, and I've got them both standing there gaping at me like I'm a prize heifer just prancing for their entertainment.
Jerry gave a sympathetic croon.
And don't you go starting too, like, to drive me mad, that humming.
Jerry wanted to tell her she was beautiful when she was angry, but he thought better of it. He ran his hand across his mouth again.
Look here, love. I can hear Fat Hal call for a beer. I must be getting back. Why don't you come along now? You've got a drink waiting.
I'll not be having any more drinks with that nasal natterer.
There's something I think you should see. You don't even have to go into the lounge.
Promise?
Promise.
Margot wiped her face clean and followed Jerry back out of the cellar.
Just peek around the corner. You'll see what I mean.
Still sniffling, Margot edged up to the corner of the lounge and peeked around. The Hobson sat doddering over whiskey and pep in front of the fire. One of the Penryn crowd was scribbling figures on a bit of paper in the upper lounge. And there at the counter, down at the far end, stood Morris and Clive Beaumaris, beaming like schoolboys at the seaside with a double portion of chips between them.
Always wet this time of year. Still, better than watching telly all night, eh?
Morris tweaked his mustache. The stocky gent gave a loud, nodding harumph and rocked forcefully back and forth on his feet.
Cracking pint, that,
said Morris, draining his glass.
Can I get you one this time?
The elephant ears dipped as their owner contemplated his pint. He made a rising noise through his nose that Morris took for assent.
Well, cheers then. I'll just ring for Margot. Funny, it's not raining tonight. It's always wet this time of year.
That was Always Wet, from Tales from the Tinker's Dam by Daniel Gabriel, published by Whistling Shade Press, www.whistlingshade.com.